Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, let me direct that we commence with our meeting, our very first meeting of the International Relations and Cooperation Portfolio Committee. There's going to be a new agenda that will be, a new agenda that will be given to us. It will have an session on opening and welcome, and it will also have a session on apologies. And then the rest are the presentations that we're going to have. I would like to declare the meeting open and welcome all honorable members and the presenters who are outside the Parliament, and the names of the presenters will also be printed in the new agenda. Are there any apologies, sir?
Our secretary is ill. I'm just going to request that perhaps I will ask to be removed sometimes. I may have to do so, as I'm not to leave. I just need an indication.
You want to let him remove? Okay. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I think since the secretary is not here, but he might have received an apology of Honorable Taylor. So just for record purpose, and I'm sure he might be having it in his record.
For the Gabani?
20 Kenyan, Honorable Kenyan.
Okay, noted. Thank you. Khatel.
Chairperson, I'd also like to tender the apology of Honorable Mpumulwana. He's attending the Postal Committee on Justice. It's taking place at the same time, but I think he might join us in the afternoon. But he might be noted.
Thank
you very much. Now, any other apologies? Okay. Thank you very much. We have a set of presentations here that we are going to receive. There's going to be a presentation on the Biden cycle by the committee secretary, Ulubabalo Sikwela. Then the other presentation, which is on the sector analysis of the budget, which is International Relations and Cooperation. This one will be done by the content advisor, which is Udineo Mustara. The third presentation will be on the budget analysis of this board. It will be done by the committee researcher, Baba U David Masala. And the last one before lunch will be the expert analysis of the budget, which will be done by Dr. Vipamanda Zondi from the Institute for Global Dialogue. He's already here with us. Then in the afternoon, we are going to take a presentation or a briefing by the department on their one annual performance plan 2014 to 2015 and the strategic plan 2014 up to 17, and lastly, the annual performance plan for 2014 up to 2015 of the ARF, the African Remittance Fund. So that is how our day turns out. And with that, the presentation that is supposed to be done by usikwena sizoyijampa for now because ngayokwenza lama insertions that I spoke about earlier on. I will then request Sizineo Musana to present on the center.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. this presentation gives an overview of South Africa's foreign policy and some of the issues that the committee has made throughout its engagement with the department, and also try to set the tone for consideration of the budget of the department later on in the day. The South African foreign policy has moved from the era of immediately after the demise of apartheid. During the President Mandela's era, it moved from human rights.
Yeah. Just to follow, are we using the one that was sent electronically or this two? Because it's neither of the presentation that we go with this one that we have here. So is it the one that's sent electronically or is it a new presentation altogether?
Chairperson, this presentation is from the one which was sent to members,
okay,
which has a budget book overview.
This one.
The one, no, this one.
The one that was sent electronically.
Electronically, yes. So this is just a PowerPoint.
It's a PowerPoint summarized
presentation one. From the main logistics document.
So this one that you have are not what you have to do.
No, but I'll make arrangements that we make now for members to have given the PowerPoint presentation. This one was sent to the
conference.
Yeah. No,
the
one
was the research unit, the other one.
The one which...
One was the analysis and then the other one was the budget.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes.
Is there any way in the agenda where we are going to engage the department on budget?
Yeah.
Which item is that?
In the afternoon, there was a 14 and 16 written by the department.
Yeah, but they are saying that it's about budget, not the budget. I don't want that this afternoon they come here and they are not prepared for this. To engage the department earlier on the country. But are they going to do something that is
Chairperson, I think that the strategic planning has to go together with the budget because the budget will be the expression of what the strategy plans about. So I think that it must, the Chairperson must ensure that they present that because we are dealing with the issue of the budget book now.
Mm.
That's what will be debated on the 22nd.
Mm.
So there's no other thing we are going to have except today for them to do that.
I think somebody is very fine.
Now the department is aware.
Okay.
They are going to make presentations, but they will also say this much has been allocated to this specific program.
Right.
We are underfunded, overfunded, whatever it is. Then we will also make our own comments.
Mm.
Over to you, Mufan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Then the foreign policy of South Africa has moved from during the era of President Mandela, which was characterized by human rights and morality to President Mbeki's era, which was characterized by the African Renaissance, the awakening of Africa, mediation processes, and peace and security, to the present, where President Zuma's era is characterized by economic diplomacy, alignment of foreign policy to domestic priorities, peacekeeping, and mediation, among others. The legislative mandate of the department derives from the constitution, whereby in South Africa, the president ultimately is responsible for conduct of foreign policy, and then the minister is entrusted with formulation and execution of the foreign policy. And with foreign policy, there are other role players which contribute to the enhancement of foreign policy, which are parliament, which relates to this particular committee, and then other, I mean, institutions which have interest in foreign policy, which from time to time access the department in its endeavor to actually have enhanced foreign policy. We are going to have one such presentation this morning from the academia. They also do, from time to time, contribute towards improving or enhancing foreign policy. Civil society, the same way, they do have interest in efforts of foreign policy, and they do participate in discussions relating to development of foreign policy. Business in South Africa, the same interest also, as we have seen lately with the South African business pushing into Africa. So they do have interest in knowing what foreign policy, how foreign policy can support them. And then we also have other departments as role players. For example, we have the Department of Trade and Industry dealing with the international trade, and also attraction of FDI, foreign direct investment. And then we also even have the Department of Finance, where you know, they, what we call science diplomacy, where they try to activate interest into South African innovations and scientific technology. And then we could also even have the Department of Environment, as members will be aware, they champion negotiations during climate change, discussions. And then we also have other role players who from time to time, like defense, we actually mentioned the Department of Defense. South Africa is currently playing a major role internationally, especially in Africa, in peacekeeping missions. This kind of role that they are playing is also assisting in improving or actually strengthening South Africa's foreign policy in matters of peacekeeping. We also have, as other role players, diplomatic missions, because diplomatic missions are implementing mechanisms of the department. With diplomatic missions, which currently we have, South Africa has 125 in 160 countries. What happens is, these are actually branches of the department, which deal with bilateral and multilateral issues of the department in the areas where they are accredited. And as such, they are the arms of, they actually implement foreign policy of South Africa on the ground in those countries that they are paid. Then under the department, there is only one entity, which is the African Renaissance International Cooperation Fund of 2000. Mainly, I mean, well known as the ARF. So what the ARF does is to govern, develop an assistance that goes to other countries, especially in Africa. It was established in 2000 through an act of parliament, basically to promote good government, democracy, and infrastructure development, and also assisting host countries through construction in different countries in Africa. This fund has also been used to assist countries beyond Africa, for example in Haiti, where there was an earthquake disaster, and also some other areas in the world, except countries in Africa. But it's basically a tool of foreign policy, which is used by the department to reach out and, you know, reach out in support of this national interest to areas where there is need. There have been challenges with operational inefficiencies in this fund, and one of the areas which the Auditor General's report had pointed out to was its lack of having a strategic plan. But there is a positive step which we have noted that this year, when the department submitted its strategic plan and budget votes documents, which are going to be considered later on, they do have a strategic plan for the AERS. So there is a plan, and there is also a direction under which this fund is going to work. This is one area which the committee in the first parliament has been discussing and also made recommendations to the effect that there must be something like that. So there is a positive step with regard to that. Now this diagram is just to show how foreign policy in South Africa is, which role players are involved, and we have already discussed this. So just a demonstration of what other branches in the society do play a role in conducting foreign policy in South Africa. Now, the department has key priority areas under which its function and mandate is embedded. First and foremost is the Enhanced African Agenda and Sustainable Development. Under this key priority area, Africa is being prioritized in terms of it being encouraged and also assisted towards a sustainable development through programs which are supported by the department, through the AU, and also through other mechanisms which will assist what the department, in the department's view, contributes to development in Africa, whether they have negotiations within relations, I mean the relations of the North, they will bring out the agenda for assistance in Africa. So not that they are speaking on behalf of Africa, but they tend to bring out issues to the attention of the world which affect Africa. Then there is the other key priority area which talks to strengthening of political and economic integration of SADC. SADC being the region which we belong to, it's most important to South Africa's foreign policy to ensure that there is political stability and also there is economic growth. Not just economic growth, but integrated economic growth within SADC. And we have other mechanisms like SACU, where it's a smaller body dealing with customs duties, then to a bigger body to study. So this is at the center of South African foreign policy, to see to it that the country convention are working together. Then there's the South-South relations. South-South relations really relate to South Africa's relations with the countries of the South. The South will include Asia, will include Latin America, will include countries which prior to in the last 10 years, they were regarded as non-actors in global trade, but at the moment they are part of what's called the emerging power, the emerging economies and the emerging markets. So this South-South relation is really the key at the moment globally. And under that, South Africa has partnerships with the BRICS countries, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and then there's also IPSA, which is India, Brazil, South Africa, and South Africa, India, and Brazil. So with this kind of formation, South Africa is well placed to actually continue and advance its national interest within this formation. And then the North-South relations relate to South Africa's strategic relations with the countries of the North and also international organizations in the North. Of particular interest would be its relations with the EU and also individual countries within the EU, the Americas and other countries, including organizations of the North, like in trade, WTO, and the others. So this relationship assists South Africa to further advance the African agenda and make sure that it gathers support from its friends in the North. And then participation in global systems of government practically allows South Africa to participate in the multilateral fora. And members might be aware that on this one, South Africa is participating in many other international fora, but of significance is its two tenures in the UN Security Council, first in 2007, 2008, and then in 2011, 2012. Where it actually participated in the UN Security Council as a non-permanent member, where it was able to champion Africa's cause and also ensure that the Security Council adopts a resolution which provided for consultation with the regional groupings on matters of security. So that was one of the highlights of its tenure in the UN Security Council. Then, what informs the department in its formulation of its in its activities in conducting foreign policy is one of the key policies is the National Development Plan, which all government departments are supposed to align themselves to. So under Chapter 7, the NDP, when addressing South Africa in Africa and abroad, provides that there must be, South Africa must enhance its position in the region and also increase trade and investment and aspire to be or act among Africa's powerhouses and then have partnerships for realization of domestic priorities, lead development and growth in Africa and deepen integration with Africa. These these provisions from the NDP have been well covered under the plan that the department is going to present this afternoon, but members will still have questions to the department directly. But these are the key framework elements from which they must align their policies on. Then the State of the Nation Address is one other instrument which we look at as the committee not to ensure that the department has actually aligned its plan, you know, for either the ACP or the strategic plan for the next 5 years. It should also be aligned to what the State of the Nation Address pointed to. So we have two State of the Nation Addresses this year, in February and also in June, and continuity in foreign policy matters is what was actually that emanated from both the SONA, and then Africa remains the center of our foreign policy, the president said that, and foreign policy still has to remain informed by domestic priorities so that it can address poverty, inequality and unemployment. And then also the issue of energy, the energy issue also has to be addressed, and the department must have interest in this. There is an agreement which was mentioned, the hydropower project agreement with the DRC, which will be coming before Parliament for ratification, and also promotion of trade, attracting investment, promotion of tourism and brand in the country, and also regional economic development and industrialization. So these issues were all mentioned in the State of the Nation Address, and the committee has to have them in mind when considering the plan, the strategic plan and the annual plan of the budget vote, whether these issues have been taken into consideration. The operations of the department, much as the committee has interest in overseeing that the department actually performs and delivers on their mandate, they have been operating in a very insecure global environment, in the sense that the global economic downturn actually affected South Africa's sector, and that consequently affected budget of different departments. But with this particular department, members will be aware that most of the operations of the department take place beyond the borders of South Africa in the mission, and therefore they are subject to foreign exchange fluctuations, and also that impacts on their operations on a day-to-day basis, because it will depend on the rand, dollar or rand pound value of the day, which will impact greatly on their operations. And the budget of the department has been gradually increasing, but they are able to conduct activities with the budget, but it has always been a concern for them that the budget is not enough, because their mandate is increasing from time to time. And that is for the committee to also Then we do have different programs which are used by the department as tools to implement the key priority areas which we spoke about. And my colleague David will talk more into the actual allocation, which Honorable Bonita was talking about, the actual amount allocated to each budget vote. I mean, each budget program. He will talk to us in 2010. But we have 5 programs starting this year. In the first parliament we have 4 programs, but now we have 5 programs, because what has happened is the department has divided what used to be program 2, which was international relations and cooperation, into now international relations and the other program being international cooperation. So we have administration, which normally administration, you know, deals with the operations of the department on a day-to-day basis, but international relations deals with bilateral relations that South Africa has with many countries across the world, and these are meant to actually assist, also assist in realizing domestic priorities. And then we have international cooperation, which the most important highlight under that is global systems of governance, continental cooperation, South-South cooperation, and North-South cooperation. So this program too now becomes the most important, because it addresses the African agenda, South-South cooperation, North-South dialogue, and global systems of governance. This is the core function of the department. So one would expect that this program actually gets more funding, so that they are able to operationalize all the what is contained in their plan. Then program 4 deals with public diplomacy and cultural services. This has been of great interest to the committee in the past, in the first parliament, in terms of the public diplomacy, you know, the strengths and the weaknesses there too. But public diplomacy in general will be talking through communication by the department on foreign policy positions to the outside world, and also to the citizens of the country, to make sure that whatever decisions are taken or whatever policies they adopt, they are understood by the intended audience, and also get support on those positions by the intended audience, whether it be internal or external. Then protocol services deal with all incoming and outgoing ceremonial services which for the state, which the department is entrusted to do. And then international transfers, which is the last program, deals with payment into different international organizations as membership fees, which each country is supposed to pay to international organizations that they are part of. Then there are focus areas which the ATT, the annual performance plan of the department has highlighted, which the committee might want to look at. This will come, you know, during their presentation. So the committee might decide to have you know, more clarity or more understanding on some of these issues, which are focus areas for oversight. Under administration, the NDP talks of the department having to streamline its organization so that it can be efficient and effective. This is not clear in the ATT how the department is going to achieve that, or whether they have started doing that. So the committee might want to get more information from the department. Then the NDP also talks to the strategic alignment commission. This is an issue which has been debated for a long time, because the National Development Plan is actually saying the department has to streamline its missions and align missions to a specific national interest. So this is one area where the department will be able to inform the community how far or how they are dealing with this issue, which appears in the ODT. Then the effective management of property portfolio has been an issue with the department and also with the committee in the House Parliament, in the sense that with 125 missions abroad, property portfolio is huge. So asset management has been a concern, a matter of concern to the committee, and also to the Auditor General's report. This came out on all the reports as a concern, in the sense that the asset management register is not well managed. So the welcome improvements the department were undertaking, so they can actually give a process report on how far they've gone with this kind of concern. Then with compliance with ICT government and supply chain management, these were issues which were raised by the Auditor General's report, which in the ATP at the moment the department is supposed to address as to how they are going to be going ahead with addressing issues of this kind. And then there was in the past, I think the last 3 months of the House Parliament, there was a report from the department on them fielding a foreign service bill and also establishing the South African Development Partnership Agreement and also ensuring the functioning of the South African Council of International Relations. So the committee is of interest to the committee to know how far the department is with those issues. Under international relations, the focus areas can be promotion of trade, investment and tourism, as this is one of the key areas where SONA has addressed in 2014. I think this will be one area where the department would be, the committee would want to know how the department is going to address this issue in their plan going forward, and also pursuing priorities of Africa and the South. I think those are the most important. Then under international cooperation, I think what is most important there, other than the ones we listed, is also reform of the Bretton Woods institutions, which is the one program which the department has been following up on for over the years now, and that debate is still going on in the UN. But what the committee has said previously is that agenda item should be kept alive. It should be left unattended. They should keep it alive under the agenda of the UN so that discussions on this can continue until some sort of solution is found. And then under international cooperation, it's privatizing Africa, the African Union and SADC. This is what they said they're going to do. So I guess the committee might want to know how, and also contribute towards how the department can achieve this, because it's one of the areas which they, in the ATP, the one they are going to present this afternoon, they have mentioned this issue. And also one has undertaken to increase intra-Africa trade and peace and security in Africa and job creation through NETAC projects. So these are the areas which they have undertaken to do, so which the committee can interrogate when the department does spend this afternoon, and also how South Africa can harness the major political and economic influence of the South to further the interests of developing countries, and also under public diplomacy and protocol that program, they are going to, what they have said they are going to do is to have a public diplomacy drive which will involve outreach programs and also use of media and radio. But what the committee has been recommending is that they should have a proactive timely communication. So maybe the committee wants to find out how far they are with this type of recommendation, and also how they are dealing with para diplomacy issues, which is where our municipalities and provincial governments also conduct international relations activities. How far they are with because there was a mechanism which was established by cabinet, which actually confirms that the department is the coordinator for all activities of international relations nature. So how far they are with this, then they can give their project support to the committee. On international transfers, the department has reported in the APP that the is process on utilizing quotas for South Africa. This issue was one of the recommendations of the fourth parliament, where the committee recommended that South Africa must ensure that South Africans occupy strategic positions in international organizations that the country is a member to, and also utilize all the quotas allocated to South Africa. So maybe a progress report, because they've done a lot on this, the department, they can give a progress report to the committee that to update it on what is happening at the moment. Plans policy initiatives at the moment is the establishment of SAFA, the tabling of the Foreign Service Bill, and also putting into operation that South African Council of International Relations. So a progress report from the department will be most welcome. Just to get an idea of how far they are, whether the committee should expect this to be coming in this year or next year, or at least within the 5 years, whether such deals will be coming to Parliament. And then the committee, I'll quickly just go, the mandate of the committee is basically to oversee the activities of the department, and we have been mandated by the Constitution, Section 65 and 92. Each committee of government, the committee of parliament has a department which it holds accountable on its mandate, and also enhance public participation. So this is basically relations with the mandate of the committee, the CIR, the Portfolio Committee on International Relations and Cooperation. So it has direct oversight on the department, and also on South African missions abroad. And also South African missions abroad are divided into two. We have bilateral missions and we have multilateral missions. For bilateral missions, oversight is on their role and impact, and multilateral is oversight on their contribution in those organizations and impact. And then the committee also oversees the activities of the African Renaissance Fund, which is the only agency that the department has, which is responsible for outgoing development assistance. And then also the committee collaborates with other partners in overseeing the activities of the department. The committee is free to consult with other departments, civil society, experts, academia, research institutions, media, and actually foreign resident nations in South Africa, in order to for the committee to participate and be in a position to make recommendations on enhancing foreign policy, advising the department on how they can enhance their conduct of foreign policy. Then this coordinating mechanism has been an issue in the House of Parliament, and I think even now that the department has mentioned this in their plan, that they hope to actually put it into practice. It will need assistance from the committee, because the committee can actually meet with the municipalities and provincial offices to ensure that this coordination is actually observed and it works the way it should. And also the committee can collaborate with other committees in Parliament here for its work, because the issues we deal with are cross-cutting. We can have even joint visits to sites of delivery to check on impacts with other committees. And we can engage stakeholders as needed, like we have one today. And then the DG has mentioned, the ATP, the one with the documents they're going to present, has mentioned that the DG's office has a performance monitoring unit. So this performance monitoring unit determines these reports to the committee, because it reports to the DG and the minister on progress of performance of the department. So this kind of report can help the committee to also track progress and also identify oversight issues which they might want to deal with on a later stage. With those reports of oversight and oversight issues which the committee undertakes, they do so in preparation of the budget recommendation report, which is called BRRR, which normally is done in October. So all the discussions which the committee is going to have starting from today up to October are going to build up into a committee's program, which will show how oversight has been taken by the committee and what areas discussed and what input the committee has made towards improving the conduct of foreign policy in South Africa. So with that, I think I should stop here for questions and allow for questions if there are any.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mosala, for the presentation. My sense is that in order to manage time, it's 10:30 now. Let's rather have all the presentations and we can engage you with the discussions. I know it's going to be difficult because it means we can get back and say, we put something on top and price, put something on top and one that another. But at least we were able to manage it. I suggest that we get another presentation from Madala from the session. Over to you.
Will be on the programs of the departments and the various budgetary allocations that have been made to each program. The information that will be contained within this presentation emanates from the Estimate of National Expenditure, which is a publication made by the National Treasury every single year that have all the budgets of the various departments in the country expressed and the various allocations articulated. Now, in the Estimate of National Expenditure, the department told the Treasury that the spending focus of the department will be mainly on sustaining economic and political cooperation, participating in global governance forums, the strengthening of policy and coordination as it relates to South Africa's development cooperation. So those are the issues that would feature predominantly in terms of how the department envisions its budget. Now, in terms of operational allocations, the majority of the department's budget in the medium term is directed towards spending on the compensation of employees, travel and subsistence, operating leases, transfer payments to international organizations and departmental agencies, and payments relating to capital assets in administration, international relations, and international transfer. Now, I'll go into some detail at the end of the presentation on some of those capital assets in terms of how much is being spent on maybe missions, building new missions, leases, and things of that nature. So I'll discuss those later on. Now, as the content advisor had explained earlier, the department has 5 programs, which is an increase from 4. As she articulated, the International Relations and Cooperation program was split into 2 programs. The first program being administration, the second program international relations, the third program being international cooperation. Program 4 is public diplomacy and protocol services, and program 5 is international transfers. Honorable members, if you look at this first table, it explains what the budget allocations were per program in the previous financial year and in this current financial year. And you'll see that in each of the various programs, there are increases from the previous financial year, with administration increasing from 1.320 billion to 1.396 billion. So there's an increase there, and I'll explain in more detail why there were increases in that program. There were also increases in the international relations program, but what you will notice when you look at it is that the majority of the department's budget goes to international relations, and I'll also explain why that's also the case. You'll see with international cooperation there was also an increase there, and in public diplomacy and protocol services again an increase. But where it gets really interesting is the international transfers program. You'll see that there's actually a decrease in the amount. Now, the reason that's the case, I'll explain in more detail, but just briefly to touch on it. That program is particularly sensitive to exchange controls and fluctuations in the value of the rand, and also changes in how much money is given to our membership in international organizations. So there will be changes there, and also monies related to our our entities. That's also something that has an impact there. But I'll explain that. The second table explains firstly the budget allocations per program for the previous financial year and the current financial year, but it also gives projected expenditure for the 2015-2016 financial year and the 2016-2017 financial year. And you'll see that there are projected increases in expenditure that are expected. The budget of the department will increase quite substantially in coming years. In the next financial year, you'll see that the change from 2014 and 2015 financial year to 2015-2016 financial year is approximately 300 million. So there is a projected increase there. and again in 2016, 2017, there's an additional $400 million that's just projected in terms of expenditure by the department. You'll also see that the nominal and real changes are also expressed in this table. I don't want to get too detailed there, but essentially what this is showing is what are the changes, percentage changes, and what are the percentage changes in terms of the programs, but also how those changes are affected by inflation. So how those are impacted by in inflationary issues also comes into play there. And there's just some detail on what the tables express, and also some of the percentage changes. And if you'd like any further information on that, I can discuss it with you at a later stage. Now, just to go into specifics regarding each of the programs, as the content advisor explained, Program 1 deals with administration. And the primary purpose of this program is to develop overall policy and manage the department. Now, in the estimate of national expenditure, it explains that the spending focus of the department will be, in terms of this program, will be on providing property and office management services to the department, as well as the modernization of the ICT infrastructure. Now, this is something that the department has spoken to us about in the past. There was a need to really modernize the ICT infrastructure of the department to ensure that the information and some the information is secure, and also that all the various processes, HR processes, and any other mechanisms are centralized, and that the mechanisms in place to manage those are really state-of-the-art. So there is some money that's going to be allocated to that. One of the other things that features strongly in administration is compensation of employees, as I noted earlier. You'll see that compensation of employees is projected to increase from $329.7 million in the 2013-2014 financial year to $369.4 million in the 2016 and 2017 financial year. Now, this is obviously to provide for the increase in the number of personnel. So the department is intending on employing more people to fill certain vacancies, and that obviously will have an impact on the amount of money that is paid towards compensation of employees. Now, the increase in personnel is expected to increase from 989 to 1,074 in the 2016-2017 financial year. This increase in personnel is intended to fill vacancies of 85 posts which have been vacant since November last year. And this is also expected to increase spending on compensation of employees from $2.4 billion in the 2013 and 2014 financial year to $2.7 billion in the 2016-2017 financial year. One of the other things that features in the administration program is expenditure on consultants. And these are consultants that the department is using to improve its ICT infrastructure. And but there's also the need to develop an integrated financial system. So that's another thing that the department is also investing in. Additional expenditure in the administration program is intended to deal with the operationalization of the South African Council on International Relations, which is also something that company advisor explained. The finalization of the Foreign Services Bill, as well as the Partnership Fund Development Bill. The second program, Program 2, is International Relations. And the central purpose of this program is to promote relations with foreign countries. Now, the spending focus, or rather the spending priorities of this program will be on facilitating socioeconomic development through the strengthening of bilateral cooperation. So, you know, our relations with various other countries, strengthening those relationships in order to foster economic growth and, you know, increases in trade. And these, the focus areas are Africa, and honorable members, I should also point out that this program has sub-programs, and the sub-programs are expressed in terms of region. So the first sub-program is Africa, the second is Europe, the third is Asia, and then the final being a Middle East sub-program. There's an expected increase in expenditure. There was a significant increase in the sub-programs between the 2012 and 2013 financial year and the 2013 and 2014 financial year, because there were changes in terms of conditions of service, the amount of support that's provided to the 124 diplomatic missions that South Africa has around the world. One of the issues that the committee has engaged with is, you know, the need for economic diplomacy to be strengthened. And the department wants to allocate funds towards the hosting of trade and investment seminars at the various missions, and engagements with the various chambers of commerce, essentially to promote South Africa as an investment destination, also to attract tourism. That's one of the things that in fact, the DG in the previous financial year had expressed to the committee that the intention was to ensure that each mission had kind of an economic diplomacy pack that an ambassador and the officials would be able to actually just, when people come to a mission, then they get that information about South Africa as an investment destination. So I think this allocation is something that is, you know, very important for the department. One of the other things that will be important to consider is that with the fluctuations in our currency, it does have an impact on how much certain things will cost. For instance, when the department compensates its employees, it doesn't compensate its employees in terms of South African you know, labor relations and also compensation policies. You have to compensate your employees according to the rules of the country they're currently residing. So if a foreign mission is based in the UK, for instance, then there are certain requirements that the department has to fulfill in terms of its employees. So that will have an impact on the salaries and various other things that will feature in a mission. One of the other things that will feature, and just building from what I just said, is that the department intends on undertaking over 819 economic diplomacy activities to attract investment and tourism. It intends to undertake 34 structural bilateral and 65 high-level engagements to strengthen political relations between South Africa and various countries abroad. Now, one of the other things that was in the estimate of national expenditure was that this program is supported by a funded establishment of 3,117 posts. And of those, 168 were vacant at the end of November 2013. And that's one of the issues that the committee has been dealing with in the past, how quickly the department fills vacancies. That there's certain processes that have to be followed, and I think there's something like a 5-month delay in terms of how quickly you can fill a post. So that's one of the issues that the department will have to contend with. But there's an expectation that as these vacancies are filled, there'll be an impact on the compensation of employees, And as such, there will be an increase in compensation from 1.6 billion in the 2013 and 2014 financial year to 1.9 billion in the 2016 and 2017 financial year over the next coming 3 years. Program three is international cooperation. Now, the purpose of this program is to allow South Africa to participate in international organizations and institutions, and it does this in consistent with South Africa's foreign policies and the national values of the country. As the content advisor explained earlier, the sub-programs of this particular program are global systems of governance. That would be the United Nations and organizations of that nature. You have continental cooperation, which would include SADC, the African Union, but also honorable members of the Pan-African Parliament. So some of I'll go into more detail with those, but those are some of the ones that feature in terms of continental cooperation. You have South-South cooperation, also as the content advisor expressed, BRICS and IPSA feature strongly there. And then finally you have North-South dialogue as another sub-program, and that would be the European Union and various other organizations. Now, the spending focus over the medium term will include South Africa's participation in the United Nations system of governance. I should remind members that South Africa was elected to serve in UNESCO to play ECOSOC, actually, not UNESCO, ECOSOC. Mm. And one of the other things that features there is South Africa's intentions with regards to integration of SADC. That's something that features very strongly. It was also mentioned in the State of the Nation address. One of the other things that didn't really feature in the ENE was the tripartite free trade area. That's another thing that the department really prioritizes. The content advisor also mentioned SACU. So in terms of regional integration, it's the tripartite free trade area, it's SADC, and then also SACU. Those are ones that feature strongly. The bulk of the spending on this program will go to the various sub-programs that I mentioned earlier. But in addition to that, this will be comprised, that expenditure will be comprised of compensation of employees, operating leases payments, which is something that the committee has paid very close attention to. Whether does it make sense for us to own a particular property abroad, or do we lease and lease it over an extended period of time? Well, these are some of the issues that were discussed in previous years. And other expenses, of course, will include travel and subsistence for employees and also the executive authorities. This program will also have expenditure related to the African Union and its structures, as well as the funding arrangement as it relates to the Pan-African Parliament. I should remind members that we are the host country to the Pan-African Parliament, so it remains one of our key priorities, and expenditure on this will be something that will always feature. One of the issues that the committee has dealt with in that regard is how much progress has been achieved in that. Have we completed construction on the Pan-African Parliament? What do we want to achieve? What's the progress up to this point? So those are some of the things that have featured in the past. And also there's various infrastructure initiatives that have been conducted. Some of the projects include the AU NetPad Presidential Infrastructure Championing Initiative, as well as the North-South Road and Rail Corridor Project. Now, these are two projects that have been mentioned in SONUS in 2012 and in 2013 these were mentioned in Stone. As well, one of the things I forgot to mention was also implementation of the Africa Action Plan 2010 to 2015. And if you'd like more information, that's something that the department would be able to expand on. Program 4 is public diplomacy and protocol services. Now, the sub-programs of this program are public diplomacy, and the other is protocol services. Now, the public diplomacy sub-program, it deals specifically with how information about South Africa's foreign policy is disseminated to the general public. How people have, what kind of information do people have about the department and its work? It's one of the issues that Parliament has, you know, really focused on, because I mean, Parliament represents the people of this country, and how people view South Africa's work in terms of foreign policy is something that the committee has been very committed to in the past. Protocol services will be issues around dignitaries that come to South Africa, and also protocol services related to visits conducted by the country as well. And expenditure on this, I'll go into some detail in that regard. There is a projected increase that's expected in terms of goods and services, as well as compensation of employees. One of the budget allocations there is 80 million, which was intended for the presidential inauguration, which happened recently this year. There was also the presidential guest house that was completed, and expenditure around that, as well as something that was also mentioned by the content advisor, operationalization of the South African Council on International Relations. There was also additional spending on compensation of employees, because to strengthen public diplomacy in the country, that particular sub-program has there's an intention to increase the number of employees that this program has. So the number of personnel is expected to increase from 349 in the 2013-2014 financial year to 354 in the 2016 and 2017 financial year. One of the other reasons for an increase in expenditure on this program was that between the 2010 and 2011 financial year and the 2013 and 2014 financial year, expenditure was made on the operationalization of the South Transfer Diplomatic Guest House in Pretoria. Also, I should also mention, honourable members, that when the committee conducted an oversight to headquarters in previous years, we were taken to one of the diplomatic guest houses, and we were able to see exactly where the money was going, and you know, the important role that particular guest house was playing in terms of who was going to be hosted and things like that. There was additional expenditure on, you know, marketing, protocol services, as it relates to COP 17, COP 17, which was held in previous year, and again, that was something that the committee had prioritized, and the committee actually went to before COP 17. The committee went to conduct an oversight visit, just to see how much was being spent. There's been increase in expenditure as it relates to the BRICS summit, the various BRICS summits on subsistence, venues, facilities, and communication services. One of the other things, honourable members, that I should also emphasize before we go to Program 5 is that I think it was last week the National Treasury published the fourth quarter expenditure report from the previous financial year. And what I had looked at it, but I haven't had a chance to send that information to members. There was an expenditure, there was an increase in the expenditure on program 4. And this expenditure, in fact, I should point out that there was over expenditure of 100 million. Now, this over expenditure, I mean, this overspending was because of the passing of the late president, Nelson Mandela. And the department played a central role in terms of protocol and various issues as it relates to the funerals as well as the memorial service. So some of that expenditure will primarily be the result of that change. So I just wanted to alert members to that, so that if they hear about that, they don't think that it's because of some untoward business. It's because of the funeral. The next program, and the final program, is Program 5, which deals with international transfers. Now, the purpose of this program is to fund membership fees and transfers to organizations such as the African Union, the United Nations, and SADC, but this is other organizations as well. The sub-programs are comprised of departmental agencies. In this case, it would be the African Renaissance Fund, and as well as membership contributions. The spending focus for Program 5 over the medium term will be on making certain transfers to African Renaissance and International Cooperation Fund, as well as payments related to South Africa's membership in to various international organizations. Now, I should also point out, honorable members, that when I showed you the previous the table earlier, I had highlighted that there was a decrease in the allocation for this financial year, and that's because, as I explained earlier, of fluctuations in terms of currency and also changes relating to our payments for international organizations. One of the things that I thought was important, just to in concluding, was that funds were approved for in terms of establishing the South African Development Partnership Agency, which is something that the committee has been monitoring for a number of years. First of all, to receive the legislation which would repeal the African Renaissance and International Cooperation Fund Act, and also have a Development Fund Act to establish the new agency. An amount of 25.2 million has been allocated for this. The reason being that the department has established a secretariat, and the secretariat would then facilitate the transition towards establishing the partnership fund, and also creating certain mechanisms in terms of accountability to deal with some of the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. So the department has been proactive in dealing with some of those challenges, and we're still, some of the legislation I mentioned earlier should be forthcoming. So we'll see when it comes. One of the other issues that I should highlight is that there's been increases in expenditure as it relates to infrastructure, and this is something that is also featured in the budget of the department. And the increase in expenditure on infrastructure will go towards the construction of new state-owned chanceries, official residences, and staff accommodation abroad, as well as the completion of existing renovation and refurbishment infrastructure projects abroad. The missions, I just wanted to give some detail on some of the chanceries that were built. The department expects to complete construction of chanceries and official residences in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, and Lilongwe in Malawi. progress has been made in terms of transferees in Kigali, Rwanda, and Mbabane, Swaziland. The department intends also to engage the private sector for development of transferees and official residences on vacant state-owned land in New Delhi, India, Riyadh, in Saudi Arabia, in Dakar, Senegal, Bamako, Malawi, Gaborone in Botswana, and Montevideo in Uruguay, through the development of development agreements and public-private partnerships. And that concludes my presentation for this honorable member.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Mandala. I know that your presentation is best of our time. But when you come back later on, explain to me what sense of no, I think the presentation is a long one. Let's get into the third one, and then the last one on the budget cycle, the budget growth cycle, will be presented by Ubaba Osikwena. And I think that will complete the picture of what the department is about and the things, the issues that the portfolio committee can latch into when it makes discussions and later the department.
thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much, Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to make a comment on generally the South African international relations and cooperation agenda and how the department has handled it. So this is just a perspective. It is designed to comment on the broad frame of South Africa's foreign policy over a period of time, in order to get you thinking about certain things that you perhaps are thinking about already. Framed it around the concept of continuity of change, or continuity and change, or continuity without change, or change without continuity. It's a big debate that is taking place outside a government about whether you are seeing more continuity than change, or seeing more change than continuity, and what are the implications of that. Try to use that to frame the entire discussion. The general sense is that South Africa's foreign policy is pretty much set now over the past five parliaments, that it has set around four major areas. One is the anchoring of Southern Africa as the central area of focus, that Southern Africa has been the immediate region towards, is the most important region for us for political and economic reasons, and that revolves around strengthening institutions or integration, but also strengthening economic linkages over the period of time. So economic diplomacy in respect of this is not a new thing. The second one is the recognition that Africa is a geostrategic zone for us, which simply means that we stand to benefit a lot directly as a country from a more stable and more prosperous African continent, but also secondly because the unity and the prosperity of the African continent is good for the continent itself. But lastly, because whatever we do on the continent is perhaps the best response to global things that are happening there. So if you believe that there is a fundamental challenge of how forces of imperialism respond to Africa's attempts to rely on its own resources and take care of its own interests, if you're going to respond to that, what you do with the African continent gives us the clearest indication as to how you want to do that. The third issue is the significance of the of solidarity with other developing countries, at least for three reasons. One, that these countries are facing pretty much the same challenges as we do, and in many ways there's a lot to learn from what these countries are doing in their own regions, how the Brazilians handle the very complex issues of South America, where they have the hard power currency and the soft power currency to take the lead and underwrite regional interests, but its role and leadership is not uncontested by other countries and its neighbors and all of that. And that's the situation we face in South Africa as well, where we project ourselves, we call ourselves, even quite officially, we call ourselves a gateway into Africa. We pride ourselves as representing the African interest, but that is often extolled, but it's also contested from time to time. And that creates serious challenges about how you marry your self-perception as a major regional power on the African continent that is able to use its diplomatic clout throughout the world in order to articulate, defend, advance, project the interests of the others who may not be able to project their interests on a global scale. If you look at how we've handled the economic partnership agreement and how we've sought to use that to protect countries that would be otherwise completely overrun by the big EU or on matters that are
very direct bearing on the stabilities of those countries, a country like Malawi, that if it implement the economic partnership agreements in the form they are in right now, it will be pushed deeper and deeper into poverty, and that could lead to all sorts of things. So you play that role. But even as you play that role, and other countries on the region decide to change tack, decide that they're not going to follow South Africa's example. They decided they don't trust what South Africa's motives are. And for various reasons, some of them because they are linked to countries that tell them South Africa is not to be trusted, it's got its own interest, but South Africa is a sub-imperial power, which is quite a lot of writing coming from the North that talk about South Africa possibly as a sub-imperial power and so on. But in some cases, simply because perhaps we have not worked on bilateral relations enough to build relations of trust. You get that with regards to Southern Africa, that at some point we may be taking for granted our relationship with the countries on the African continent, because we are certain that our interests are enlightened. But we do not quite understand that sometimes these countries are not certain about our national interests. Similarly, with the developing world, we've been focusing, or the third area is the developing world, focusing on solidarity or building alliances that are important for how we use major multilateral platforms of the sound, which are mainly the two significant ones, which take on different agendas. We have the non-aligned movement, which tends to focus on the political and security questions. It's very useful for us in terms of pushing the agenda of non-proliferation or a nuclear-free world. And South Africa has played a very crucial role in that. And then we have the G77 and China, which, by the way, has become fully integrated into G77. But it is a premier platform for coordinating negotiation positions with regards to the non-political questions. It has been the most useful platform with regards to trade at the WTO, pushing the development agenda in the WTO, which South Africa has been very key to, working very closely with Brazil, though Brazil has changed tack a little bit, mainly because Brazil's former Minister of Foreign Affairs is now the secretary, the director of the WTO. So there is an interest on the part of Brazil at least to have some achievement, even if that achievement undermines the development agenda. You know that thing. They need to tell a good story at home. So that creates a little bit of differences between South Africa and Brazil. But the G77, which, by the way, has just celebrated its 50th anniversary, significant, and the NAM are an important platform for us to advance our global interests and to advance them on the basis of a South focused agenda, kind of progressive agenda. But these two institutions are being challenged by the rise of mini multilateralism, the smaller multilateral groups that can take decisions a little quicker. There are a few countries. G77 has 135 countries in it, and NAM a little higher than that. So it's huge. It's very difficult to come to agreements. For example, in the G77, we have almost three different groups. We have the ALBA group, which is quite radical and militant on the left. We have the Bolivia, your Venezuela, and countries like that. And then you have the mixed group where South Africa has been found, and then you have more conservative countries of the South that tend to work with the countries of the North on a number of issues. And the smaller multilateralism have the advantage of being able to decide very quickly and move very quickly on issues and bring together major regional powers, which means they have representational value in them. And a good example is your IPSA, India representing South Asia, an important particular region. We have Brazil, Latin America, and we have South Africa representing Africa. And these three regions are very, 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 very significant. And as you know, IFSA was established when President Mbeki made a proposal for a creation of a G8 of the South. But we couldn't get to 8 countries, and the 3 willing countries established the IFSA. So the IFSA was always a transitional platform, and so when it looks like it's floundering, may be overtaken by other things, we should always remember it was never meant to be a permanent body. It was, the aim was to create a bigger platform of the countries of the South. And the BRICS is a platform which is not geographically it's not South, but geopolitically it is South. Because you have your Russia there, which is in the north, the northern hemisphere, but it is ideologically South in its perspective. You know, South in those terms. And the two of them were meant to complement each other. IFSA focusing on development cooperation, very concrete cooperation, as exemplified by the work of the IFSA Fund, which has done amazing work in countries like Guinea-Conakry, Guinea-Bissau, in Malawi, in Rwanda, and others, supporting those countries in areas that a normal OECD donor would not support them, but areas that are significant for their upshot. If you look at Guinea-Conakry, for example, the town Conakry, is electrified via 3 generators. So the whole town is electrified via 3 generators whose fuel is supplied by Shell and Totalfuel. Shell is a British oil company. So on a daily basis, Shell brings fuel from the UK every day. And IFSA and South Africa worked on an idea of transitioning that with a more sustainable infrastructure, and the IFSA fund was very, very critical for that. But that has not worked, unfortunately, partly because the Brits and the French government went back to the government of Guinea-Conakry and said, we have an agreement. So if you go for this, you are violating an agreement that is in place. So they are back to oil, to fuel-based electrification of the entire city that is expanding in a big way because there's an agreement that they cannot get out of. And now the negotiations about extending that agreement so that they can add a 4th generator. So that's part of the examples of the IFSA fund and how it could play a role which is economically and developmentally significant, but also politically meaningful. And then also exemplifies how this is causing challenges in other parts of the world. The idea about the BRICS Development Bank is the biggest challenge in the North. It is the biggest focus of attack on the BRICS. The idea of a development bank is under serious attack. There's fear that this will win some certain countries off dependency from one set of development financiers, which is mainly the development bank, the World Bank. And there's fear that you have a BRICS bank and it has capitalized to the value to up to about $200 billion from the word go, then countries like Malawi would be able to source funding for their agriculture from the BRICS bank and therefore avoid the limitations that the World Bank has put on them in terms of when they can source food and where they can buy crops. There's a very, very interesting story about Malawi and crops and how that is tied up to a World Bank agreement. The 4th area is relations with the developed countries. Of course, South Africa sees this as mainly good for economic reasons, for trade and investment. This is really literally just trade and investment agreements. Of course, I know that there has always been an element of what we call development cooperation or development aid, But the portion of development aid in terms of South Africa's relationship with the any of these developed countries is minuscule. It's very, very small. Which is why the discussions right now relating to the developed countries indicating that South Africa will no longer qualify for development aid in the next cycle between 2016 and 2017, starting from 2016 and 2017, is not of great concern for South Africa in terms of what the state does, but it's of great concern in terms of what NGOs do. Because none of that funding goes into NGOs, and none of them would collapse. Some of them are in very critical areas. Because the developed countries have decided South Africa is no longer in need of development assistance. They have redefined this from a developing country to a middle income country. There's an ideological issue around that as well. That in the UN, you bifurcate countries into developed and developing, but in OECD thinking, you talk about income. Don't talk about their development status. And on that basis, countries are changing. And South Africa's decision to withdraw bilateral investment trade agreements last year has cooked up quite a storm and has caused quite a lot of difficulties, and the developed countries are trying to respond by quickly downscaling development assistance, but we do not know what that is going to lead to. With regards to relations with the multilateral, the most significant is the relations with the EU. These are also fraught with all sorts of underlying difficulties, great difficulties. The fact that President Zuma withdrew from the, or did not attend, let me put it that way, did not attend the EU-Africa summit after the EU decided who should be part of the African delegation, means that you've started a particular a sequence of combating, but whether we'll maintain that, whether we will not back off we'll determine how the EU takes it seriously. They are worried that if South Africa maintains that, it will change the balance of power in the manner in which they negotiate, because they have a serious difficulty. They need South Africa now a lot more than ever. The sixth area is global governance, where South Africa champions multilateralism because it is a response to growing unilateralism under the power of the U.S. globally today, which has always been very skeptical of the institutions of multilateralism, especially the United Nations, where it has delayed handing over its affairs contribution because of the UN's role in certain areas such as in Haiti and other areas, where also it has also withdrawn funding for some such as UNESCO. It has withdrawn funding fully in order to try and bring it down. And that makes global governance very, very significant, because this issue may look very far, but they are likely to harm South Africa in the long run and its interest if we do not defend the critical significance of global governance and multilateralism, because for many poor countries, without that, they are not shielded from imperial designs globally generally. With regards to strategic orientation, I would just want to suggest that there are four major things that underpin South Africa's strategic orientation. The first one is that it is a reformist. That is why it has positioned itself directly over the past almost 20 years. Second one is that it is pan-Africanist. Reformist means it participates in international institutions with the hope of reforming them so that they become more representative, more equitable, and pursue fairness and justice and so on and so on. But we must make it is different from the other countries. The other countries are transformers. They really just want to bring down the institutions of global governance to create new ones. A slight difference between those two. Then Pan-African is in the sense that it places Africa at the center of everything it wants to say. And it wants to preserve the sanctity of the African continent and its independence and its self-reliance. Thirdly, it is eclectic ideologically. In other words, it's not socialist, it is not capitalist, it is not liberal, It is not Marxist. It's not, it is attractive. It is a broad churches ideology. It's eclectic. It draws from various ideological. And it's multilateral. It's almost by instinct. It wants to work with somebody else. We haven't. It's very rare where South Africa is acted alone on any issue. The last we knew was when President Mandela tried to champion the isolation of Nigeria after the killing of Ken Saro-Wiwa by the junta of Sani Abacha. But after that, it has always wanted to work with some collective built relationship. Even in what has been suggested by some as unilateralists, which is to push for Kosazana Dlamini Zuma as the chairperson of the AU Commission Chair, the campaign was led by Angola, the campaign was a Southern African campaign, and the campaign was able to win Central Africa through Congo Brazzaville. So it was multilateralist right through. Now the challenge that you face in terms of strategic orientation is beautiful, consistent, but how do you keep it in the face of a changing international environment? How do you adjust it? How do you nuance it? How do you, because a beautiful, strong, clearly defined strategic orientation can lead to rigidity if you are not careful. Now, comment very quickly on the 2009-2014 years and what were the leftovers. There were seven things that were decided by the African National Congress in Polokwane in the era of international relations that were key deliverables for this area. The first one was the creation of the South African Development Partnership Agency, and that was in 2007. And that was going to replace the African Renaissance Fund. That has not yet happened. We need to understand what is the holdup, is it legal issues, is it financial issues? What is the capital that is in the African Renaissance Fund right now? We need to know what that is. Because it's such an important mechanism, even in our link with SADC, even in the manner in which we work, for example, with the Brazilians. The Brazilians decided in 2008 to change their similar thing, development agency, and it had been done in 8 months. It was fully done in 8 months, and they want to work together with ourselves. The Indians also have reformed theirs in preparation for coordinating these development agencies so that they could work together as progressive development agencies to respond to development challenges on the continent and supplement what IPSA could do and supplement what BRICS can do. But the longer we delay, the more worrying it is. And the countries of the global north are bombarding South Africa with assistance, and they've already promised they will meet a rent for rent. If South Africa invests 20 billion into this, they would invest 20 billion into it. It's a huge capital. But the catch is that they want to use it for, and they say it's upfront, for trilateral cooperation, which means South Africa would work with Germany in order to assist Malawi in the area of agriculture. There's a particular reason why it's used. Germany can no longer do that directly with Malawi because it has become politically unpopular to do that. The advantage with it is that South Africa then gets to do what it wants to do in Malawi and draws an international donor and conditions and influences and manages what it does in Malawi. The challenge with it is that it can take the burden, it can carry the burden of a donor. It can be seen as doing the bidding for a donor. So it's a tricky business that you need to think about, but there's a huge, huge, huge push for this. And when it's established, it will be awash with lots of money, but also the implications that come with it. The second commitment was to put together a white paper, and the white paper was indeed launched. And I remember that this committee raised issues about the extent to which it had been discussed at all and properly discussed and understood, because it introduces certain specific concepts that were not known before, such as the concept of Ubuntu diplomacy, It is a beautiful concept, but as you know, the concept of Ubuntu has been abused to introduce ideas that are foreign to it itself. For example, the Ubuntu has been used to talk about, black kindness, in the face of all sorts of difficulties, we just say yes, we're nice people and stuff like that. But Ubuntu also means justice. Ubuntu also means insisting on our humanity. Ubuntu also means fairness in all the more problematic areas. Now, the white paper introduces the concept of Ubuntu diplomacy, and there were issues about who had discussed it, how did it get to it, and all of that. And it had a particular definition of national interest, but there was a process already at the time to develop South Africa's common view on what the national interests were, but the white paper already has it. The third issue is that now the National Development Plan is the overarching policy and vision. The white paper may need to be adjusted so that the country does not implement two visions, the one that is in the Ubuntu white paper and the NDP. I'm not suggesting that they are two different, but they are areas of alignment that are needed. The third decision from Polokwane was the SACWA, the South African Council on International Relations. That has not been established yet, and I know that there was a cabinet decision on it in 2011 approving. Almost 4 years later, it has not been established. It would be nice to know why. The fourth one was a code of business conduct, it was called, to manage the relationship between South African businesses and government, make sure there's alignment, because South Africa is getting a lot of flack over the behavior of South African businesses outside on the continent and all of that. The idea was to have a code of conduct that was not punitive, that only imposed new things, but build a kind of a relations of trust between government and South African businesses abroad, especially on the African continent. The idea of a code fell away, and I'm not quite sure how it fell away, but the ANC's last conference also did not bring it back, which means perhaps politically it fell away. So perhaps it's something to just note that it once was and no longer. The fifth commitment was to professionalize diplomacy and prove its efficiency and all of that story. The concern there, which also came out in the ANC's own discussions in Maung, is the ratio between career diplomats and employee diplomats. It is the political deployment of or the deployment of political employees in the diplomacy, in diplomatic services, common. It's all over the world, it's all everywhere. But what may not be usual is how you keep the ratio between a career diplomat and a political diplomat. The general rule, which I'm not suggesting must just be followed, we all have different conditions, is that you have 80 to 20 between the career and the political diplomat. In South Africa, we have to get the figures, but it is suggested that it is in brackets to the other side. So there's more political diplomats than career diplomats in diplomatic service. And I say this with humility, that we should be careful not to also use it to suggest that it is a dumping ground for French counselors. It's a danger to do that, because if we have any assets globally, we have the assets of prestige. The glory of the South African struggle is perhaps South Africa's biggest asset in the world. Huge respect. We don't have hard power currently, so we can't squander hard soft power, the prestige we have. So we'll have to think about it. The sixth area was the regulation of para-diplomacy or diplomacy of sub-national entities. Because there was a worry at the time, and I remember that at the time, in the run-up to Polokwane, the big issue that had been discussed was a case where President Mbeki went to China, and on the day he arrived in China, there was a delegation coming from two different provinces. There were two delegations from two different provinces also rocking up in China, and there had not been any coordination. And that led to a cabinet decision on the regulation of this. There is now a forum which is regulating on this. But the extent to which establishing a forum of that nature overcomes the fundamental challenges that we identified, which is alignment between what provinces do and the national foreign policies, which is the coordination of the logistics, which is the understanding of how different regions and different countries can respond to economic opportunities in the world is yet to be understood. For example, a number of big countries are now using provinces and cities to enter countries where they would not enter at a national level. So you establish the facts on the ground so that when you come to the national level, you've already established the facts on the ground. The Chinese do that quite well. So are we being penetrated through the provinces and the cities? It's a question to raise without being paranoia about. The other was to increase public engagement. And indeed, compared to the previous 10 years, the previous two terms, the previous term, the department has done amazing work in terms of increasing public engagement. Those public meetings, the ministerial visits in Cape Town, in Grahamstown, in Polokwane, in Pretoria, in Bangweni, and Bombela, and I think there's one more missing, were very, very important in terms of the ministerial engagement on foreign policy in with the people on the ground. Because the danger was always going to be, if you don't do that, foreign policy will become unpopular, which means people will not identify with it. They will think of it as foreign and as a waste of money. And these were important. And of course, you will immediately notice that these are major towns, which means we have a challenge of taking it a little further. Or there's one vendor. But the next challenge is to take it a little further than just towns. And these were all mostly held at universities, mainly with university students, which is very, very important. But perhaps there are other constituencies to try and reach out to. And of course, the establishment of Ubuntu Radio and Ubuntu Marketing have been a positive development. It is making a big difference. The use of social media by the department has been very, very good. Public diplomacy has improved quite significantly. There has been some interface with business and some interface with intellectuals, but I guess the program of running international relations does not allow enough time to interface with these important bodies. The biggest problem for us is that the nature of diplomacy is such that it is becoming more complicated than just age-driven. Just the nature of it. A classic case is that at the UN, United Nations, South Africa takes a particular Security Council, a particular position on main Mabema and on Zimbabwe, on Iran already in 2007-2008, and that caused a huge controversy, a storm of controversy. We take one particular case of Burma, that the decisions are taken in our afternoon here, morning in New York, and the South Africa decides that it is not going to vote along with the US and the UK, and all that they needed to do is to get the Washington Post to call the old man, the patriarch, Bishop Tutu, and say, South Africa has voted against human rights. What does Bishop Tutu do? He just has to say, terrible. It's all of that. So before South Africa comes to explain itself, the story has already run its course. It's the nature of diplomacy. In diplomacy, if I can't beat you, if I can't beat you, or if I beat you in the corridors of negotiations, I take the discussion outside it. If you are not deft enough to play in both terrains, you will fail on anything, Dalai Lama, any of those things. South Africa's biggest, developers' biggest challenge are inside South Africa. The Brazilians tell you that they have such a relationship with their society, with their civil society, because of the relationship of trust, because of engagement, that it is difficult for somebody else to use them against them. But in our case, it's very easy. It's very, very easy. The relationship between government and civil society is very, very poisoned already. It's a natural entry point. It's very, very, very easy. Now, the last part I want to comment on was on what came out of the sauna. I wanted to suggest that this sauna was very important in terms of aligning for us, those of us who are interested in international relations, what the agenda then is. What does the agenda of radical transformation mean in this area? What is the agenda of NDP alignment mean in this area? I want to suggest that it is a combination of continuity and change. There is alignment of the NDP, but there is going to be maintenance of the current way in which we have understood our role in the world. That's partially because there is a lot of discussion that must go into understanding what the NDP says about international relations. One of the things it says, or the primary thing it says, is that economic diplomacy is the primary thing. And therefore, it says Southern Africa and Africa are trade and investment zones. We've come to know them as bigger than just trade and investment zones. We know them as a geostrategic zones, which means trade, investment, but also politics and security. But the NDP projects them strongly as trade and investment zones. Because the underlying thinking may be that we're thinking about what is in it, what is out there for us, our national interest. The developing world as well comes across as a matter of economic partnership, which is understandable because we're creating linkages between international and domestic imperatives. But there's a danger of just seeing them as economic imperatives. Because the BRICS, for example, is not an economic bloc. The BRICS is a forum for high politics of global reform. That includes economy. So it's a little broader than the concept of economic partnerships as understood by the OECD. And the OECD is not just an international organization, it's a Western organization. Developed countries as economic partners, yeah, they've always seen them that way. And then it adds one element which I found very interesting, our commitment to domesticate or domesticize the International Convention of Disability, soft issue. I've argued that this is merely representative, it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for saying we want you to domesticize international commitments. They may be political, economic, or it doesn't quite say so, but I'm reading out of. Otherwise, why would that one stand out? There are many other conventions. Mm. But I'm thinking that is what it means. The second one is that we will take care of the social issues. They are very important. We're now members of the ECOSOC. We've been elected into the ECOSOC, which brings back the social and developmental questions into the international agenda. And that is a positive. And then in the presentation by Minister Kadebe, he brought a very important subject, and I'm very excited about it, the recognition that we are in a blue region or we are part of a blue region. We talk about a green economy and stuff, but there's a blue economy. We are surrounded by two very significant geo-economic zones. We call them the South Atlantic, and we call the other one the Indian Ocean. Both account for hundreds of billions of international trade, especially as the Middle East is becoming troubled. Sea lanes are shifting back to your 16th century, 17th century move around the Cape. That creates opportunities for us to have transshipment shops here, yeah, like the Singaporeans do, so that you don't have billions passing your borders that do not benefit you at all. So there's now talk of a transshipment hub by the Department of Transport, but it is a very huge opportunity. And it's not new. In 1997, President Mandela, opening the Indian Ocean Rim Association meeting, says the Indian Ocean is perhaps much more significant for us economically than the Southern African land area. Because during colonial rule, it was a part of the reason why what drew major global powers of the 19th century into this region, and it has become even more significant now. Also because of the security question around the piracy. But the Blue Region is a huge area of opportunity for us, but also because it helps us cement our relationship with your Indonesia and Australia on the other side, and with your Brazil and other Southern American countries. And we are to become the deputy chair of the Indian Ocean Rim Association, which has suddenly been elevated as an institution to a significant institution. And we will be succeeding Indonesia, which succeeds Australia, we'll be succeeding Indonesia, which succeeds Australia, which succeeds India. And the four countries have agreed that they want to work together to really transform the Indian Ocean into a geostrategically significant zone. But which means we should start thinking about it now, because we only become the deputy chair in 2016. We should plan and strategize now, because it's also a mechanism through which we deepen our relationship with Indonesia, which is historically very significant for us, and economically quite significant, and also with Australia and with India. It's a huge opportunity. And then, of course, the minister also referred to participating in global economic reform initiatives. Now, let me first by just talking about what are the implications from the NDP. I'll leave a copy of this thing. I have actually written notes. I'll leave another take of this. The implications from the NDP, the first one is that it underpins economic diplomacy. But it is the department itself that must think about the implications of it. There's nothing wrong with economic diplomacy, but it must know the implications of it and how we're going to respond to it. Because human beings don't live by material things alone. And the world is not just about material things of trade and all that. There are other issues of value, of justice, that are part of our history that are very important there. The second element that we got to that is that the NDP itself says the country must do an investigation of what we mean by national interest. Because the country can have as many interpretations of what we mean by national interest. Then Africa can see the national interest as linked inextricably to prosperity and stability of Africa. But nationalists may see, the narrow nationalists may see national interest as merely about South Africa. Liberals may see national interest as economy. But what do we mean by national interest? There's supposed to be a study that must lead to that. That's what the NDP talks about. Also, the NDP says we must clarify ourselves about what types of regional agreements we want to make. It makes a very interesting observation, the fact that we don't quite have similar agreements with different countries, but different agreements. For example, we have what we call elevated bilateralism, which is usually called binational commissions. Binational commissions often means elevated, but quite often we use binational commissions for normal relationships. Binational commissions should mean there are diplomatic relations with 15 countries in Southern Africa, but there's an elevated relationship with two countries in Southern Africa. But in our case, all normal is also bilateral. As a result, we're the largest number of PNCs in the world. Few countries have more than 10 PNCs. The last count was 36 in South Africa. It becomes a problem when a PNC has 13 priority, then it's no longer a priority. It's no longer elevated. It's everything in a PNC. The second thing was about refocusing capacity that the NDP talks about, and it talks specifically about the auditing of our foreign representation. It asked us to pose very serious questions about whether we can afford the representation we have, and whether it is of optimal value to us, and whether they should all be at the same at the level they are right now, and ask questions about whether we're deploying intelligently. But that audit that the government is supposed to do, of course, an effective SAFA is implied there, and then an inclusive policy making implementation. It requires that the department must interface with others a lot. And a very important point was to, which is actually what you see in Indonesia, you see in Turkey, you see in India, you see in Brazil, you see in Argentina and other developing countries, a very big trend that has happened is that all of them are astronomically improving government research and analysis capacity in the area of international relations. Brazil, when we went to the BRIC summit, to the BRIC academic forum in March, you had just over 50 academics that work in government to help the Itamaraté fine-tune the strategies, the tactics in negotiation and things of that nature. South Africa does not have that capacity in any government department, in the international relations government department. There's a policy and research analysis unit which does not do research and analysis necessarily, but it coordinates engagement. It means it's more public outreach unit. But the NDP says we should establish a sharp research and analysis capacity, the ability for long-term analysis and for topical analysis, which is to respond to issues on a daily basis. Thank you very much for your indulgence.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tomanda. I wish it was the only presentation so that engagement could be that much long. We have kept the numbers kept you discussing for a long time. I wonder if we should have a humanitarian break. But because your presentation went up, Rabanne, I think we try for 5 minutes or 7 minutes. Then we have some 3 or 5 minutes break. We come back, then we take discussion. We must then indicate, the other structure, the other approach could be that we go back to the first presentation and make observations, make recommendations, ask questions, and then get clarified, then get to the second one, the third one, maybe so also Balangalea, because it's a very, very interesting discussion. In fact, we follow what he's doing, where he is a lawyer. But what will link to the second and the third one is this presentation in budget. So we have a week much longer.
Hello, who is that? Sorry. It was only an hour before the other meeting, so we must ask as many questions. Sorry. Please, talk to your life, not read the slide. Summarize, please.
Thank you very much. Am I clear, honorable members?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon, honorable members. My presentation will be extremely brief. My primary focus will be on the process of the budget cycle and also zooming into the mandate of the committee and also what to expect in the next coming weeks in relation to the processing of the budget vote. I'll begin by outlining where the process begins and where we are and where we are going from now. The process begins by the tabling of the budget by the Minister of Finance, as mandated by Section 27, Subsection 1 of the Public Finance Management Act, and followed by the tabling of the annual report strategic plan by the minister, also as mandated by section 27, subsection 4 of the Public Finance Management Act. Subsequent to the tabling, the annual report and the strategic plan are then therefore referred by the speaker to the committee for consideration and reporting. And the committee does that process in three phases. Phase one, which started last week by the drafting of the program, of all the activities that are to happen relating to the processing of the budget goals. Some of the activities have happened now today, by the presentation of the colleague advisor, the researcher, and Dr. Zondi. And phase two of the process will follow in the afternoon by the briefing by the department on the entirety of the annual performance plan of the department and the entirety of the strategic plan and the annual performance plan of the African Renaissance Fund. Following that, next week the committee is going to sit and consider a report which will be drafted by myself and my two colleagues, David Mandala and Vinel, the colleague advisor. And after having considered and adopted the report, the committee will then report to the House as mandated by Rule 137 of the NA Rules. Through the parliamentary publication called the ATC, Announcements, Tabling, and Committee Reports. And the entire process must have been completed by the 11th of July. Following that process, the committee then, there will be a budget vote debate, which will happen on the 22nd of July. And the value of that, budget will be at the good of Chamber. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kwela. Do we want to touch any questions?
I think the members have been reading out in and out one by one. Can you just go through? We started late, man. I think that you must spend as much time as possible.
Agreed. My friend, I'm moving to the other side. Agreed. Yes, please, I'm going to the
okay, colleagues, our member, let's have a discussion question on the first presentation. On the first presentation that was made by Mr. Mufala, I imagine that there are comments or observations or recommendations by members that they would like to make. Honorable Olumisa, Honorable Mukhalapa, Zizarate, Honorable Jordan, Honorable Mufami, Honorable Maila, and Honorable Khatel. In that order, please.
Thank you. I was going to slightly differ with your approach first. I see this as a package presented to us. So the content advisor as well as the budget analysis was more procedural. Now Mr. Zondi has introduced now so he has put a cleverness to it. Because whatever we do, it depends on our budget. So I wanted to be allowed to engage
ask a question to Mr. Zondi, which might impact on our budget. Can I?
Yeah, agreed.
Thank you. Mr. Zondi, thank you for the eloquent presentation. As usual, we have peace and care. Mkhabulo, free Mkhabulo. My main worry is, what role will South Africa be playing in what is appearing to be an implosion in the Middle East as well as in some countries in the continent, like Libya, Egypt, Mali, Sudan, Nigeria, and Kenya? The UN tells us that these countries are being destabilized by terrorism. And South Africa has to play a certain role. What role should we play? How can we be involved in those countries? What informs us before we agree that we will send troops? Are we sure that our country is we've seen how the Kenyans are being targeted for what they were trying to do in Somalia. So when we take decisions to get involved in this conflict, do we have an intelligent analysis and indications of what we are doing? That question is linked to the perception that we want to be a big player in the continent. Please report on this maybe this implosion of Iraq areas and so on. And lastly, the contestation at the international hearing where I see surrounds the question of who is in control of intellectual property rights. Everybody is trying to defend their own territory. The World Trade Organization collapsed, we know those talks. Now we're talking about the climate change. Those talks are also being threatened before Lima. We also know that the Biodiversity Convention is also going to talk about these issues of intellectual property. As a developing country, South Africa, what would you advise us to do? Very last point on your presentation. Brazil, so-called BRICS. There is a perception out there that these countries are only wanting to use us for whatever reason. What comes in mind is issues like the nuclear development. If, for instance, South Africa were to award a country outside BRICS on this development of nuclear presence that's already indicated, do you think that would affect the relationship between us and the country which has got capacity to one another?
Thank you very much, Honorable Lomisa. Honorable Khalapa.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first start by...
Let me just interject you. I think the submission made by Honorable Lomisa was that member can latch into any of the presentations so that responses are made by 2 o'clock or also the civil department must have had lunch. So, I think that is a question of authority in terms of my time. So, amen.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sam. Let me also agree on what Honorable Onimita has proposed, because they are interlinking all their presentations. But just appreciate all three presenters, and mainly singing out Dr. Zondi, because he's always a resource for this committee. We can always engage with him in terms of international relations and give us a piece of thought in how we conduct our work. Just a couple of questions.
Firstly would be to our content advisor. I would want you to tell me the kind of oversight that we as a committee can do, especially when it comes to the multilateral institutions and the mission. What do you propose the committee should be doing? Because part of our constitutional mandate is that oversight in those three critical institutions, of which we can't do oversight in the bottom type of situation. What do you propose in there? To our researcher, I think what just briefly explained the over expenditure, if I heard it correctly, in terms of protocol, the program for the 100 million, was it related specifically to Dr. Mandela's funeral, or was it interlinked with other expenditures, or was it just precisely for that? Then to Dr. Zondi. Dr. Zondi, there's always a discussion about this issue when it comes to how we conduct our international relations. As you are aware, we spend about 48% of the budget of the department in conduct of our international relations. And yet you said that the NDP dictates that we need to define what our national interests are. I for one still have to find out what our national interests are. And I think the issue that I would want to raise is how do we align and marry our domestic imperatives with our international relations, with a view of saying, are we convinced that the international relations that we conduct in terms of our foreign mission, in terms of our projection of economic diplomacy, sufficient enough in terms of the foreign missions that we have? I'm asking this question when it comes to the issue of the focusing on the capacity, the implications of the NDP. Are we overstretching ourselves in terms of the foreign missions that we have, vis-a-vis the domestic imperative that we have to, the international relations should respond to in terms of economic diplomacy? Because if you look at the report that we have in terms of the bilateral relations and the trade relations that we have, there is no synergy in terms of where our foreign missions are and in terms of how we get ready for money in a business sense. So I would want you to say to us, what do you think we should be doing? Because of it always being a thorny issue of review of our own modern mission. But if we've got economic diplomacy as a focal point, if we've got domestic imperatives that must be responded to by our conduct of our international relations, if we've got national that we need to align ourselves with, and if you've got an NDP that says, well, this is what you need to do, you feel that the foreign missions you have respond adequately to what we need to do in an international relation. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I wanted to raise issues related to the first presentation, but I want to concentrate more on the last one by Dr. Jones. The one of the presentations which were done by our committee secretary, which was the first presentation, and it was, I thought, a rather unfortunate turn of phrase. And I quote from the document which was distributed, and it says, South African foreign policy over the past two decades has been marked by success. from Nelson Mandela era of human rights and morality to President Mbeki on African Renaissance and refugee and mediation, also to President Zuma's era of economic diplomacy, alignment of foreign policy, domestic imperatives, peacekeeping, mediation, occupying central stage, which suggests that after Mandela left the presidency, South Africa's foreign policy did not, human rights and morality had no weight in South African foreign policy. Now that's a very odd turn of phrase, I would have thought myself. And I think it needs to be reconfigured and thought through differently. Because I would say that human rights and morality have underpinned South African foreign policy ever since 1994. And to suggest, as this paragraph does, that no, under Mandela we were concerned after that, this very dangerous notion, extremely dangerous notion. And I think, especially in light of what Dr. Gordy also said about soft power being in fact, one of the key components of South African foreign policy. And that soft power relates precisely to those notions of morality and human rights. So I would like, that particular paragraph to be rethought and reconfigured, because I think it could be very, very, very misleading if we were to change that as some sort of guiding shape of our foreign policy. In relation to Dr. Gordon's presentation, there are a number of issues I would like to raise, not so much as questions, but as observations. He says, among other things, that the need for us to engage the private sector for the development of our countries and put a number of countries. I'm not sure what that means when it means that we should engage our own private sector for the development of our countries, or we should engage private sector in the countries where the chances are. Because I think that also raises some interesting problems. We had the experience of a United States embassy that was built in Moscow during the Soviet time, and we used the Soviet contractors to do it. And when the Americans went and inspected the embassy, they found that it was a huge concrete piling device, because virtually every room in there, the Soviet intelligence had installed one other listening device, a concrete device. So, alright. Let's think about things like that. Dr. Gordy also spoke in terms of the non-aligned movement and our role in this, and I think that's very important. But he said, among other things, that the non-aligned movement's role in international affairs has been to promote non-proliferation, specifically, I suppose, of nuclear weapons. But there are two new nuclear powers now in the non-aligned movement. South Africa, as far as I know, is the only country that ever had a nuclear capacity which actually had it. Intelligence, in my view, decision. But, you know, what would Dr. Gordy then say about the role of man in relation to the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons, considering now that two new nuclear powers are in there? Then there's the other issue that he raised about the relation between South African civil society and South African diplomacy. And he used the example of Myanmar, where we found ourselves in a very embarrassing situation, and contrasted that with what happened in Brazil, where the relationship between Department of Foreign Affairs and civil society is such that we could have a third trust in the Greek and embarrassed to the Greek government through the pronouncement of civil society in the world. Yeah, I think that's a very dangerous observation. But I think there is one other element that we should never lose sight of when we look at South Africa and compare it with other countries. Brazil has been an independent country, or even an empire at one point, since the 19th century. And it, I think, does have a strong sense of its national self-existence. I'm not quite sure that we are there as yet. We are still very fragile along many, many lines. And that, of course, creates the space for those sorts of interventions as well. But in addition to that, in this part of the problem, that our own Department for International Relations and Cooperation is not aggressive in terms of engaging in South African society. You see, if you're going to have a significant vote like that in the UN Security Council, in General Assembly, it's useful for your own citizens to know what your thinking is on the issue. Because once you vote there, you see, and yeah, that business in time does trade against them. Because the vote will be taken at, let's say, 2 in the afternoon in New York. It's already nighttime here. You see? You're already sleeping here. So where the Washington Post calls, whoever in South Africa at 8 p.m. South Africa time to find out that news, you know, it's already too late. It's going to be in the papers the next morning, including our own papers, thank you very much. Because you see, the New York, the Washington Post is going to put that, right? But its website is going to go to races, etc. The South African morning papers will pick it up in our own morning papers. By the time our journal is closed, you know, the whole is bullshit. Would it not be smarter in Durko where something like that will come up? Brief the South African media, brief elements of South African civil society. This is the issue, this is the stance we're taking. You close that gap. I'd like to, you know, to comment on that. I am particularly pleased with Dr. Zoni pointing out the strategic importance that the Indian Ocean has acquired for South Africa since 1994. apart from, you know, the problems relating to the Suez Canal, etc., even if the Suez Canal and the Middle East are the absolute peace, I think the Indian Ocean has now acquired a strategic importance for us, which is very different from the past. In the past, it had a strategic significance because it was the route for other people to reach the Far East. It is now the route by which we link up with the Far East and the East. If you think about the fact that in Britain we have China and India as our partners, both of which are emergent economic powerhouses, then the Indian Ocean becomes very, very important. The series of the Indian Ocean becomes very, very important, which has a bearing on a whole range of other issues, including the capacity of the South African Navy. So again, I'd like to hear some comments about that. Then the last one is this issue of, are we getting value for money in terms of the number of missions we have internationally? Yeah, I think that is something that does need some revisiting, because it's an issue that comes up quite regularly, and it is that danger which she points out of our missions becoming less than what they should be.
Another question, next
thank you, Chair. I just want to just reflect very quickly on the first presentation and the second. I think I want to just raise a maybe point of clarity around the issue of the this being the first time that the strategic plan is being developed by the department. And what are the implications of the cost into the programs? How would that then look at the programs, especially in terms of program 2 and program 3, I think it is, international relations and cooperation. I would wonder, because there's so much of stressing on integration, and yet those are two programs that need to really speak to each other, whether we're separating the institution from the forum of engagement, whether that is healthy in terms of building the strong kind of integrated framework that we need. I'm just asking because I'm curious, it's the first time, what was the thinking behind having 5 programs without a strategic plan? How then was that decided, and how would that also have an implication financially on the department? I think now that the department is moving towards a strategic planning process, it would be able to have a more clear financial program as well. And the second issue, I think, is whether we would be just simply importing the operational inefficiencies of the fund to the development agency. I would want us to be cautious about that, because I think the stress on the operational inefficiency is something that we would not want to duplicate if we are looking at an agency. But more importantly, I think the questions that were raised by the good doctor around the issue of the of what capital is there in the fund, and how, you know, what is the progress in terms of the fund. I think one of the more technical things I want to ask was, do we take the issues of currency fluctuation in terms of the strategic plan as part of the risk factors? And how do we build it in terms not only of projection, but I think it would give then a sense of how do we build that into the strat plan. But for me, I really can't say confidently that the messaging from Program 4 or the public diplomacy is something that is speaking sufficiently to the issues of education, but more to just the basic issue of foreign policy, and whether we've aligned it, whether our intention really as a nation is to align our foreign policy to everything that is international. Because I'm concerned, I think I'm coming to that point in terms of the issue around the international convention. What are the implications of going the route of domesticated foreign policy? I think the filling of vacancies, I have a problem with the approach to the tick box. If we say we have 34 vacancies and we're going to fill 5 vacancies by, what are we saying about the capacity and the training of the department, and what money is spent in terms of training and capacity? You know, I think that as a content advisor, we should be able to have a sense around saying what really is the value, the financial value of the capacity in the department. And what this means is it goes also to the issue of the career diplomats and the career deployees. Because what it says is that we don't have a proper succession planning. If we are going to be just recycling the same, and I'm going to use this word, I think, interchangeably, same old deployees over and over again. I mean, at what point are we going to start using this, you know, commitment to the youth agenda suddenly at that point? And how do we take the radical, I think I was correct, you got to go on economic transformation, not just transformation, issue two off the shores. But I think that we must be able to say, what also in terms of that, you know, when you're speaking about the property, my question is, what value add does this property have, does the guest house have, in terms of drawing business interest? How do we quantify it? Can we quantify it? Can we say that of these properties that we have, 100 and however many properties, with all of the renovations that we are doing, this is the value that it is going to have add in terms of bringing investment and we need to attract the kind of, I think that is where we need to have a budget that speaks directly to the program of the department and says, look, this is what the department is intended to do, this is why we spend 100 million rand on a funeral. These are the kind of implications that it has. I like the point Dr. Zondi raises as I'm closing on the issue of the distrust of South Africa and the continent. I think that is very clear, and I raise that point. It's a concern, I think, for the younger generation in this country, because I think the question that it's asking is whether we ourselves not only take for granted, but whether we have shocked in the continent's ability as a economic center of the world. Even though the world sees us as such, do we have that trust? And I think that it should also be clarified in terms of this thing of moving from a developing to a middle income country. Who decides that? How did we miss that opportunity? How do we miss such an opportunity? And how do we, with all of these relationships that we have, multilateral, how do we not secure that opportunity? And I just want to ask you, so, you know, the extent to which we will compromise our sovereignty if we don't make maximum use of the multilateral fora that we have, if we don't make absolute and maximum use of the transversal opportunities we have, especially this opportunity of the blue region, which is resurfacing again. But I think just the one issue I failed to raise is the issue of the performance monitoring unit and the asset risk. I mean, how are we able to give sufficient consideration of how we are monitoring it? I think that goes to the point of monitoring performance, because performance shouldn't be monitored by how many chanceries, I still need an explanation, there are, but what are the chanceries doing in terms of achieving that mandate, that economic development that we want to achieve? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Montani.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, in addition to your request for an explanation on what chanceries are, I have made an observation that the counties where... Okay. I have made an observation that these chanceries are built mainly in Africa or in counties that could be said to be G7 and non-aligned, from the non-aligned movement. So I wanted to check, is there a challenge in having them built in developed countries? And because if we are not trying to get into that space, it might maybe add to the notion that says we are trying to be a sub-imperial power. And then in addition to the question on the overspending 100 million. I wanted to check what is the implication of this underspending on the audit outcomes of the department. And Dr. Rodi, on the county having too many, you call them binational relations, which we, in your opinion, are normal relations. What can we do to actually, as a country, to make it a point that we don't have too many binational relations which might not actually give us what we require? And lastly, I just need an explanation on what Bretton Woods institutions are. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'd like to welcome all the presentations you made today. I think that they are taking us forward as the portfolio committee. But Chairperson, the first issue I'll go into is the presentation by the content advisor. I have looked at the report of the legacy report of the previous portfolio committee. It worries me a lot that the previous portfolio committee actually shaped on its responsibilities of oversighting the department. I'll make an example. If there is an African Renaissance Fund which is used for disasters in other countries, used for relief, whatever it might be, and then that Renaissance Fund is sourced from the National Treasury of South Africa, and the Portfolio Committee does not go and see whether it has done that
then the portfolio committee is still responsible. Why did you allow this thing to happen all, over the whole term? Yeah. Because it means that we are not doing our job properly. Yeah. Number two, Chairperson, on the very same issue of the inefficiencies, operational inefficiencies, I don't understand how they can come out, because the CFMB is very clear to the report. When it gives money out, that money must be accounted for better. So what is it which has stopped the portfolio committee for calling the ambassadors from those countries where this money was dispersed to come and account here? To come and account here to this portfolio committee? And then at the same time, identify certain key areas. We cannot go everywhere in the world, but there are certain key areas where we have to make a follow-up. For example, let's say there's an investment of 100 million. The big fact, man, how many schools have to use with that money here in the country? So that at the end of the day, we are able to justify our foreign policy with our national interest. Because I think that if we can be able to tell the public that what is being done, they'll be able to be supportive. So. And then on the issue, on the other issue, what I'm actually suggesting is that whatever model you used previously, it was wrong, it must be revisited now as this thing is starting its work, so that it is corrected. And then number two, Chairperson, is the issue of the multilateral institution. Comrade Chairperson, we have to differentiate between these multilateral. We have multilateral institutions that are the United Nations, WIPO, World Intellectual Property Organization, UNESCO, whatever it is. Yeah? And then we have the fora, like ABOPRIS, of which they are not at the same level. But what is critical here is that when you go to the multilateral institution, where we pay this huge membership fees, South Africa must be entitled to some of its civil servants serving in those multilateral institutions. Because if we don't have our own people there, our agenda is not going to be monitored. Take for example, the Director General of the WTO is from Brazil. Go to the WTO and look at the staff of the WTO. A lot of them are Brazilians. So what do these people do? They ensure that whatever thing which is raised by Brazil, it reaches where it's supposed to reach. So if we go and pay and have the hands-off approach, then we're going to be in trouble. The Pan-Africanist Parliament, I don't know, I didn't see from the legacy report that the portfolio committee ever go there to see what is happening literally on the ground. Because if this parliament is going to appropriate funds for that parliament, we must know that we are taking value for money for those funds. I think that, why is this issue to me? Because it's everything very clear around that. And then on the other issue, Chair, is the issue of the problem of the assets. I also don't understand that one. Because the CFMB is also very clear. Part of accounting, you have to account what assets you're having. But I think the Department of Public Works came with Kiyama, sometimes government-wide immovable asset management act. This is very clear what you do with the assets. It's quite embarrassing. You went to Chairman one time. You found that one of the ambassadors dumped the building. There was no one there, just dumped. Mm-hmm. And then Kiyama provides a process that if you are going to release the property, what must happen? So I don't understand why you allow this thing to go through. Because there are tools to arrest that. And then on the issue of national interest and terrorism, there really we have to reach a common understanding. Because what is a terrorist? Who funds the terrorist? Because you can find that those people who fight terrorists today, they created a lot of terrorists. They were supporting them. They created them. So that's why that those issues really we must check carefully. Let's have our definition so that as we move forward, we don't fall in the trap of being violent or being managed by foreign forces so that on their behalf and then they make us go and take certain decisions. Because really when you go to Somalia, I'll be honest with you, go and ask why those problems are. Why is the brother against brother? Those are the things you must engage that and engage the communities involved. Because someone cannot come and say, no, those are terrorists. Why were they terrorists in the first instance? What conditions make them to be like that? So I think that the issue of the NTP must, but what I also like is the issue, the national interest, I can just define it completely. Anything which is going to benefit the country. Our international relations must be in such a way that at the end of the day, there must be plus. When you go outside, we must get more business to the country so that we can create more jobs in that country. I think those are the things which we must really look at. But on the last issue, on the issue of Dr. Zondi, the issue of plurilateralism, whereby the WTO processes are being short-circuited, so that the big countries just take the smaller countries abroad and then run with them and say, this is a decision of the West. You know? So what might be the approach of South Africa around those issues? Thank you, Chair.
Another question?
Chair, I'm going to be very short. I'm not sure that the question I'm going to ask should be directed to the staff of the department or to the political leadership. I think as we form and build international relations, we ought to be building in such a way that medium to long term is the direction in which we want to take our country into. Now, immediately after the fall of the Berlin Wall, there was talk that now that the world has become unipolar, we would move into a period of long-lasting peace, if long-lasting be understood to be relative, of course, because history is never ever static. The point that Dr. Samandla Zondi was making, that there is now, with the initiative to develop the BRICS country and even the idea of forming a bank, is now being seen by the established World Bank sponsors as a threat, suggests that new tensions will arise, because we must not never forget that the First World War and the Second World War arose and started in a unipolar atmosphere, but one in which competing capitalist interests clashed and there was feverish diplomacies all over, but the First World War resulted. Similarly, later on, the Second World War. Now we've come back to a unipolar world in which free market, which is nothing else but essentially the very core of capitalism, is the order of things. If not, we cannot just make alliances without considering carefully. Who do we want? If we ally with China and Russia, we ally with that country, and so on. This point that Dr. Samandla was talking about, that some of them are beginning to see us as potential danger to them and so on, that requires that we must shape our international relations in such a way that medium to long term, we are generally assured that our not just our economic interests, but also our security interests are reinforced. I don't know if Dr. Samandla will comment on this, or any of the members of this committee. I think it's an important consideration that we must reflect on. Chair, I'm going to ask you to excuse me for a short while because I want to be back at 2 o'clock. There's some urgent matter I need to deal with. I've asked the General Revisa to brief me if this point is responded to as well. A little later on, if you allow me, sir.
Yeah, just before you leave, just take care of the issue earlier on. When the department will be here at 2 o'clock, part of the comments that have been made here can and should be responded to by the political department. But if there are officials in certain specific matters that want to fill us in before we meet the department, we should sharpen the PC itself with regard to these are the areas that we can look at where they are underfunded, the mining is painful, utilized, da da da. Officials must continue to do that. But I think the department will take care of that in the very least. Mama, Honorable Kenneth.
we have all the information, but mine is not going to know. I'm concerned about the AAR system to say it's the only entity of the department. So, and also when you say that you want South Africa at the end of 2021, South Africa, the recapping Africa to be better and the betterment of the world. We're still having a long way to go. And I heard, you know, what talking about the focus, our focus area on prioritizing in Africa, in the SADC, and also increasing the inter-Africa change. But I'm worried, nothing is said about the APRM. And I'm also just want to check who is funding the APRM in the country. And this is a program also for the SADC to take us through. I don't hear anything about it. Maybe because if you say you want to be sure that you want that to be successful. Secondly, I had one of the reasons we talked about cabinet approval of 5.2 million to the South African Development Partnership Agency over the medium term for capacity building. Now, Dr. Zondi has told us about something lately. I missed the point because that's why I'm missing this point. This part of the project that told us about the development partnership agency, what is one better than the ARF. Maybe can just explain to me. You said that something is not being done. Just to check what is that something. And is the going to benefit from that, or it could get something from the ARS? As you know, that ARS is a humanitarian assistant. Also, on page 11, I think on the 125 nations abroad. We said that on administration side, you can choose and the register is not well managed. That is a problem. What mechanisms therefore are there in place to care this problem? To see that the registers are very managed. Because you know the register is very easy, it's the source of everything. People don't have a register that is complete. lastly, about the entity because of streamlining the department, but this is not clear in APT how to start. What is maybe the problem? How do we start with this streamlining? How does the department how does it going to be structured? That's structured. Thank you, Sir President. I think that's all some of the questions that have been asked. Thank you, Sir.
Yeah, just a few comments on this. Should we do that one of them? Okay, one more question. Dr. Sir, the comments are why is it that, and thank you everybody for a very good informative presentation. Why does it appear to me that with regard to the issue called the Ubuntu Supremacy, Ubuntu, that this work, does it have an English or Afghanistan device? For years, I've tried to say it is meant to like an Afghanistan. Human to recover it is not an empathy, but it's more than that one. In its fullest concept of that. Now, if Mutu, then is a concept that can only be found either in the African continent or in South Africa,
shouldn't we, as part of our democracy, diplomacy, particularly under positive opposite diplomacy, ensure that in that we want a foreign relation that is humane, to the world. So that is part of our plan. And so that as part of our public diplomacy, we factor in another human being that is unique to the world, your Nelson Mandela. There are many countries whether it's culture or heritage or feeling, etc. Sometimes they picked up an individual, and that individual became the main attraction or gained respect for such a nation. Gandhi is one such person. In America, there are just a few. Now, are we doing that enough? Friends of Africa, maybe we could do more. But Dr. John was also saying that internally, there's a need, agreeing with you, there's a need to go to the radio, to visit the people, institutions, the intellectuals, etc. The leadership of the country, the government, the department must carry everybody about what we are about. The other mess I thought I must latch into is the issue about the African American Fund. I agree with the observations that the Honorable Khatir has made. Perhaps in the fifth Democratic Parliament, not affecting the weaknesses. The weaknesses that the Guineo spoke to, that there are no guidelines about, you got the fund, there's a disaster in another country, you take this relief fund, you throw it in there, 50 million or 100 million. But the guidelines are not very clear how the whole relationship is governed. And then we need to put it to the department. It must have a very thorough regulation of this. And that does not mean that the PFMA cannot be used to ensure that money is used properly. The other matter, I thought that you were talking about the strategic orientation of South Africa, the reformist, the pan-Africanist, multilateralism. All of these are important for South Africa. Even before there was 1990, the unbending of organization, even before there was 1994, we have had engagement by outside government with many other countries. Part of the liberation project. Now, after 1994, in fact, we grew very fast in our linkages with the international community through multilateral formation, and the demand for reform, the reform of the security concept, and in terms of which we want to master the support of the entire African continent, the East Asia, etc., is correct. And must continue because the Security Council has a veto power. So sometimes each member state commits a lot of shenanigans elsewhere only to veto them at that level. So it's undemocratic, it's unrepresentative. And the Africanist dimension is also very important because we're African ourselves. Now I was going to ask you, who within the African continent think that when South Africa champion with fellow African states the issues of the African continent in the G20, in the G77, and then someone or a particular country thinks that South Africa is being sub-imperialist? Could it be because of the Anglophone Francophone tension that sometimes are there, because in the former French-speaking countries, with respect, sometimes we find that the divide is just there. I'm not aware that the relationship between Anglophone and Lusophone countries actually exists the way I see it. Now, the parting shot is on the issue of the BRICS ban. You call that. It's very important for purposes of development. Even in this country, just after 1910, those who, the African leadership that thought the Patriot Bank, the old mutual were not friendly enough. They established Sunland, they established Kofka. Now, if the developing world thinks that the IMF and the World Bank set standards and things that are ripping them off, keeping them underdeveloped, it is only correct that they have their own bank, the British Bank. Thank you. Now, let's get your comment, but other issues will be discussed in the department. Dineo, if you want to comment, comment, Siavala, between 10 past and 12 past 3, Siavala, for lunch, ne? I'm sorry. 10 past and 12 past 1. And lunch will be served here, so we'll take some time. You know?
Thank you, Chairperson. I must say, by the time the department arrives in the afternoon, they will find a robust and ready committee to interrogate the ATP. Chairperson, first of all, let me just explain in general terms what chancery means. We had thought we would have a future engagement with the committee to explain all the kinds that are used. But for the purposes of today, a chancery is an official president. I mean, the official office of an embassy in any country that is accredited to. So the offices of South Africa in London, where the office is, that's a chancery, it's called a chancery under diplomatic terms. But then there is an official residence where the ambassador stays, and then other staff members stay in in staff quarters. But chancery means the office. So all those buildings which are referred to is the actual offices of South African nations abroad. And maybe just to say, missions themselves are divided into many categories. If you have an embassy or a mission in a former Commonwealth country or a current Commonwealth country, it's called the High Commission. And then British, it's called High Commission, and then embassies with any other, and then at the UN, they are called permanent missions, and with the EU, permanent representatives. So these terms will come across as we have presence in the committee. I should also deal with the problems of why the committee was not able to do oversight, especially on the ARS and issues which are raised. Honourable members, you're going to be tackling with a very difficult element, which I think will be your first task in the next meeting. Just like now we have to deal with the budget. There is what we call a parliamentary oversight model here in Parliament, which determines how committees are going to perform their mandate. So with other committees, with this particular committee, since our oversight is mainly beyond the borders of South Africa, according to the current parliamentary oversight model here, any trip or any travel which you take overseas is regarded as a study tour. You're going to learn from counterparts, sectors in a different country, and then you come home and report and compare. So this is done by other committees and it's relevant. But for us, it will be an oversight visit. So we meet with a challenge when we want to do oversight overseas, because we cannot do oversight overseas. Oversight visits are only envisaged internally. And they are allowed, all these other committees are allowed 4 oversight visits per year. So for international relations, this particular committee, that doesn't exist. Study tours are only 2 study tours, international travel, twice in 5 years. So what it means, the implication for this committee is, if you want to do study tours, which are not oversight, you can only do them twice in 5 years. But if you need to do oversight like we are discussing now, that you need to do oversight over ARS projects, over the mission, those will be taken as study tools. And you can't, okay, and you can't do the more than, so it's the parliamentary model which is a problem. On the issue of, so that also covers why the committee has not been able to go to ARS project sites, and also has not been able to oversee missions abroad. The issue of parliamentary, Pan-African Parliament, also, this committee did actually interrogate this matter with the department. How come they're taking this long to actually construct headquarters for this? Because it's very costly for them to be hiring premises in Midrand. So there were problems regarding the sites which they were allocated, which environment, EIA, impact, environmental assessment was done and it came out negative. So they had to abandon the project. But it's upon this committee to actually inquire from the department how far they are with that project. And then with asset register challenges, indeed there are challenges. As we have said, there are 125 missions across the world. And there was an audit which was undertaken. This is the audit which reported back to the committee. And the outcome was that some of the properties which were reported to be there were not actually physically there, and those which were physically there were not recorded. So it's the challenges with the registry of the actual property that South Africa has approached. So the department works with the Department of Public Works, and also members can ask the department again something on this. Then the I'm just going to the. Oversight on missions, I've already touched on that one, yes. And then the ARF issues. The ARF, actually there have been issues even with the ARF in terms of the service plan we are referring to, Honourable Member, is the service plan of the ARF. The department's service plan has existed, long with the department. But the challenge was with the ERF. They didn't have any strategic plan. But this year, when they come to see this afternoon, they have a strategic plan, which we hear the positive step in terms of now projecting what the ERF is going to be doing. And at least, there are things which they can predict to say this amount of money is going to be used for this and that. But there are those incidents like your humanitarian. If a disaster is going to happen in Somalia, you cannot know in advance. But at least say some, you do some projections of,
Point A.
Yes, perfect. And then the other thing is then the transition to, I think the most important thing there is now that the members are aware that there has been some problems with the ARF, maybe the committee would need another session with the department for further explanation of how the ARF operates, so that you are able to manage the transition into SATFA, because SATFA is coming, so that you don't import, like the member is saying, you don't import problems which actually were in the ARF into SATFA.
I'd like to just one of the questions that was raised by Honourable Mohalapa was with regards to the overspending by the department. Just to provide some clarity, what I meant was that overall there was over expenditure in the previous financial year of 117 million. But the funeral accounted for only some of that. The funeral of former President Nelson Mandela, the costs as it relates to Program 4, for example, which is public diplomacy and protocol services, was 20.1 million. And then there were, 27.1 million. And then there were other expenditures, which are part of the 117 overspend. One was operations abroad as it pertains to IFSA. There was unexpected expenditure that came from there. Most of this additional expenditure is actually from international transfers. So when there was a fluctuation in our currency, it had an impact on how much we were paying to organizations that we are a member of. And there were also additional amounts that were sent to support the AU Commission because of we have Gozo Rana Dlamini Zuma there and providing her with support as well. So additional funds were sent there. So that 170 million includes another issue, mostly from Program 4 and Program 5.
Okay, just a follow-up clarity on this one. Does that mean the voluntary 110 million that was transferred to the AU Commission, it did not come from the ARF funding? It came from the Program 5, not from specifically the ARF, because there was somewhere where they said the ARF, because of the cabinet cut the slice of the allocation, they did a voluntary contribution to the AU Commission of 110 million. Where did that come from? It cannot be accounted as over expenditure because it should be in part in the ARF and funding.
To address your question, sir, what I'm referring to in terms of the over expenditure was from the previous financial year. So from the previous financial year, there was overspending because of the issues that I highlighted earlier. Now, the transfer you're referring to was a cabinet-approved amount which was taken from the ARF and transferred into other things. That features in what's contained in the E&E, spending out the expenditure for this financial year. And the amount you're referring to is from... Cabinet approved a reduction of 540.3 million over the medium term from the African Renaissance and International Cooperation Fund. That was approved by Cabinet. And then some of that amount was then, some of the reduction was intended to be used for the establishment of SADPA. And that was part of the restructuring mechanisms that have been, that were implemented by the department in establishing SADPA, its secretariat, and that's something that obviously the committee will then have to look into as the content advisor had expressed.
Yeah, you can come back.
Okay.
Just
it's just one last issue which I didn't address, which was raised by Honorable Jordan on the trends in foreign policy. What I meant there was that the characteristics which I highlighted are the ones which featured most strongly during the era of Mandela, Mbeki, and Zuma now. Not that there is no continuity, there is continuity, but they feature strongly during their era.
Thank you very much. You basically...
No, I'm not here as a car.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not
here. Yeah.
The issue you spoke to the para-diplomacy with regards to other countries feeling that what they cannot get from the president or the minister of foreign affairs and put the economy
something, they then get it from the same country via your mail or your method. And is that China like that? My sense is that this will say, the people who are appointed there, who are deployed there, if you like, as mayor, may not understand the world development that is every day, like your minister, your ambassador, your president would do. Some nuances of do and do and done, because something is still coming or something has happened or is about to happen, and therefore, and there are these countries that may tie you to them via your cities. Don't you think that what you said there about trying to like that, I don't know what, whether you want to come back to it, but I think it is something we must look at because we are getting more and more involved in the West. And the respect that we expect to have, also Dr. Jordan spoke about that elsewhere, but it could be over time we could be set from the back using some of our own decisions and
Thank you very much. You basically have given me so many papers to think about, but there's a question that comes that stimulates a particular thought, then one must go and research and think about quite a lot of those, including the question you are raising, Chair, because it speaks to this question we're raising about the extent to which the government generally broadly, but the department itself, spends enough time analyzing the global balance of forces and how things are changing literally on a daily basis. All the countries that we call partners to ourselves, the BRIC countries, are on a regular basis increasing their understanding of the countries that they spend with. For example, in China has just designated one university to be dedicated to BRICS. The Brazilians have established, for obvious historical reasons as well, they've established one of the biggest centers on African studies. And of course, you know, they increased the number of diplomats on Africa by about 500. But they understand that you must increase the number of diplomats, but you must also increase the capacity to understand the countries you're dealing with. My own sense is that we haven't quite treated R&D seriously, research and development seriously. But it is the diplomacy of today that the keys are in the nuances, the little thoughts and so on. If we are going to go into a negotiation on a nuclear non-proliferation and the other side has experts on every little bit in the text, and we are using your ambassador who must also negotiate the trade issue somewhere, you will always be there. And therefore this NDP idea that DECO must have this ready available research capacity internally that will conduct analysis to verify, for example, whether the fact that, which we already know, that the largest growing number of bilateral agreements with the municipalities and provinces are in the area of agriculture means anything. Why is there this large number in agriculture? We do not know. But what we do know is that out of a relationship between the Western Cape and Ontario in Canada were able to now export to us pork. Canada is going to be exporting pork to us in big numbers very soon. And we have been exporting blueberry to Canada. And we will no longer be able to export blueberry to Canada. Our farmers in the blueberry area are gone. How did it happen? There are final little things we needed to attend to that we did not attend to. Long before, they had built a relationship from the bottom to the top. The trade attaché, trade and agriculture attaché, has received a reward for creating a powerful deal. There will be others that you can't rely fully on us externally anyway. South Africa, there is a small pool of international relations experts, very, very small, minuscule, completely. But government has to build its own capacity internally. There has to be somebody doing an analysis what is happening. People are raising questions about can we trust the BRICS countries? Do they have interest? I think they are likely to, but then it's an analysis. We need a serious analysis. What is China looking for with regards to the BRICS ban? We want to host the BRICS ban, but China is going to be contributing the most. It is voluntarily wanting to contribute the most. Why does it care? What is it looking for? We need to understand it, not because we want to be paranoid, but because we want to have calculated decisions on the basis of what we know. And that is perhaps the second transition we should go through. Where this transition out of apartheid and exciting, the realities of global diplomacy today means that we have to be sharper in understanding what is happening right around us. One very interesting case is the concept of Ubuntu diplomacy. I agree. The concept of Ubuntu is actually absolutely revolutionary. It introduces a different concept of humanity. The dominant concept of humanity since 1490 is based on what the French philosopher says, I think, therefore I am. It is bifurcation of humanity into those who are powerful and those who are less powerful. Ubuntu reverses that because it says, I am because we are. So it's powerful. Well, but is this the reason why we have Ubuntu diplomacy? Are we theorizing? Are we thinking carefully about it? All I know is that a special representative of the Department of State in the U.S. On the 18th of June 2009 first used the concept of Ubuntu diplomacy, and South Africa visited the U.S. And South Africa, the minister and the secretary of state, Hillary Clinton, were quite close to the concept we have it now. It's very strange that our concept came from the U.S. It is one of those coincidences, let's call it that. You just look for the speech by Elizabeth Becky, where Ubuntu is redefined to simply mean coexistence. For the Americans, coexistence means coexistence with us. It doesn't mean coexistence of humanity. It means cooperate with us. That is why they praise the fact that we changed from DFA to DECO, because they interpreted cooperation as cooperating with them. But I'm just underlining the fact that perhaps we need to ask, because not in paranoia, we need to build our capacity to ask those questions so that we theorize a little bit more than just use names. Ubuntu diplomacy without some sort of theory, some sort of thinking about it that comes from us, it will not change anything. It will just be a brand. And that's the thing we need to think about. And that ties into the question that was raised by Honorable McCorter, that I think that this committee could assist our country and assist DECO is to keep pushing us all to think about the next 30 years and the next 40 years. We really need to get a good handle of what is our long-term goal. If we look at South Africa has a strategy on BRICS, but very few people know about it. That might tell us what we assume, our assumptions are about our long term. What is our strategy on the old South multilateralism, on the NAM, on the G7? There is fear in this country by a number of progressive people that we may swing with the current at a particular time without understanding the long-term perspective what others that we work with already have. The Chinese are very clear about what is going to happen in 2023. So when we go into BRICS, because it's one of the questions to try and go to the department, are we putting all our eggs into BRICS now at the expense of other things? IPSA did not meet, NASP did not meet, which is our relationship with Asia, and all that, but BRICS has met. We have made BRICS very, very important, but should that happen at the expense of other important things? Or would BRICS benefit from maintaining all of these? Will this Indian Ocean idea, specific one, be given space when BRICS occupies so much space? Just thinking.
Thank you. working here. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, lunch is served at 1:15. We will be back by 5:43. Enjoy the
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I had thought as well.
Thank you.
You okay?